You are listening to the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast, the official podcast of the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Here's your host, Tyus France.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for tuning into the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast. I'm your host, Tyus France. And today I don't have Alex with me, but you don't even have to listen to my voice today. Today is kind of a special thing. If you don't know it, we've got a lot more people involved in this than just myself and Alex. Sam Toll is our communications director, and he reached out to Connor Boyack. And if you don't know who Connor Boyack is, he writes the, I think he's in charge of creating the Tuttle Twins series, which is a series of children's books that teaches principles of liberty, libertarian concepts to children. They're children's books, and they're absolutely incredible. Sam reached out to Connor, and they had a little interview. We recorded it, and that's what we're listening to today. So without any further ado, here is Connor Boyack being interviewed by Sam Toll, our communications director. I really hope you enjoy it.
So I tuned into you thanks to Tom Woods, the Tom Woods Show, a guy who's a great voice and a champion of liberty. And he introduced me and my crew to the Tuttle Twins, which is a series of books that you've produced. Tell me a little bit about the Tuttle Twins and what got you started and what they're all about.
So I've been kind of a freedom fighter for a long time, and these ideas of liberty matter to me. They're something I've now turned into a profession with Libertas Institute, which we'll be talking about a little bit later. Any dad, I want my kids to understand what it is I do and why I spend my days the way I do away from them. And so it was a few years ago, I went on Amazon to try and find some books. When my kids were little, like any parent, we buy books that teach them, why hygiene is important and why they should share and whatever. They're just useful tools to communicate ideas that we can then have a dialogue about. So I was looking on Amazon trying to find, books that teach kids about free market or property rights or, whatever. There's like nothing. There's stuff for old kids. There's like the Uncle Eric, whatever happened to Penny Candy type books for like preteen teens. Now there's the Rush Revere book by Rush Limbaugh that talk a bit about American history, but for older kids, there's nothing that talked about the core ideas, the principles of, it's not history, it's not about people and presidents, it's about the core basic principles of liberty for kids who are age about 5 to 10, which is how old my kids were at the time and still are. And so we put one book out. This was Based on the Law by Frederick Bastiat. We kind of boiled it down into a 60-page fun story where we introduce the ideas throughout the story that are in Bastiat's book. So we kind of simplify them and talk about the basic stuff, wrap it in a fun story. So kids don't even, it's not like a textbook, like what are your rights and what is justice? No, they kind of see it through experience in the story. And so we put it out there. We actually went to Freedom Fest in Vegas as about, 3.5 years, I think now, as kind of a market test saying, okay, here's all these libertarians who love Bastiat. And they have kids and grandkids, so let's see how they respond to the book. So we got a booth at Freedom Fest, and we, talked about the book and sold a bunch. It was a fantastic response. And so that gave us kind of the market test to say, all right, let's do another one. And so we've now done 7 books. We're soon going to begin working on our 8th book. We're tentatively planning to do 10 total, and each one covers kind of a different key in the liberty movement that we kind of, again, boil down into a fun story and teach the same ideas to kids.
So the I've purchased the books, the set of books for my 6-year-old, and we started with The Law and really enjoyed the way that you took the theory and the the message behind Bastiat's essay and converted it into a message that kids can understand. The illustrations, which your partner has produced, are spectacular. They're just very compelling and invite the kids to get right into the message. And you're right, it's not a preachy, granular, difficult textbook kind of thing. It's a a nice kid's story that flows and presents the message in a way that's very compelling. So you have mentioned The Law, and it's based upon Bastiat's work. There are seven others, and libertarians may recognize the theme that you've got, the miraculous pencil, the creature from Jekyll Island, food truck fiascos, road to serfdom, golden rule, and search for Atlas. And folks might recognize the theme where you're taking works that take the message of liberty and converting it into something that kids can digest and assimilate.
Exactly. We wanted to make sure that each book in the series covers kind of a different principle or facet. And so we've got, you know, a book that talks about what are rights and justice. We've got a book that talks about what is money, or what's this fiat currency, and what is, you know, central banking. I mean, what in what other circumstance would a six-year-old learn about the Federal Reserve, right? Like,
right.
This stuff just doesn't happen in any other context. Schools don't teach about this stuff. You know, we talk about the free market and division of labor, spontaneous order. We talk about individualism versus collectivism, you know, spontaneous order. We talk about protectionism, competition, marketing. And so a lot of these different ideas, stuff. I mean, I was amazed. Again, you know, this wasn't like a strategic plan that we did a bunch of research and market testing to refine. It was just, hey, I wrote a story. Let's see how, you know, people respond to it. And I have been like repeatedly blown away with each book at how we hear from parents about how their kids are understanding it, the conversations they're having. Is, you know, for those of us in the liberty movement, we don't want to preach to the choir. You know, the choir is important. We need to kind of firm up the choir and make sure we're motivated and educate and everything else. But we want to expand our ranks. That's why we do what we do. And again, this was no part of any strategic plan. But what we found is that these books have been a tremendous resource to increase our ranks. Because, yes, we're reaching children of libertarians, but we are, I'd say at this point, they're probably like 15% of our overall customers. We sold, I think, over 140,000 books now.
Wow.
And so what we're finding is that most of our customers are, you know, generic conservatives or constitutionalists or Republicans or, you know, moderates or whatever. We're getting too many progressives because they can kind of sniff out what we're up to. But we get a lot of people across the spectrum who are not political. The parents have never heard of Bastiat or Hayek or Mises or any of these people. They've never encountered Rothbard. They would never pick up, you know, a treatise on the Federal Reserve or on law. Like, that's of no interest to them. They're not overtly political. Parents in their playgroup or church or neighborhood or whatever, that, hey, these books teach important values to my kids. They've been amazing. My kids devour them. That other parent's gonna be like, oh, hey, I'm gonna pick those up. That sounds great. Because every parent wants their child to be, you know, well-rounded and fully educated and everything else. And so we are reaching a ton of families outside of our traditional circles. And more to the point, the parents are gonna read along with the kids.
Exactly.
They're sitting down on the couch together at bedtime, they're reading the stories, and we're reaching the parents with a very to consume story-based formula where the parents are learning about these ideas and principles. We get reader letters and stuff all the time from parents who are like, hey, this is super interesting. Like, bring this to adults because I've learned way more than I ever did in college about this stuff. You know, like, it just makes sense and I can wrap my mind around it. And resource to increase our ranks, to reach out to people in a very non-threatening way. It's not like, here's this, you know, 500-page Rothbard book.
Right.
You need to read it. No, here's a colored, you know, fun cartoonish book to read along with your kids in this shared experience, and you're going to learn along the way. So that has been an amazing kind of accidental part of our overall campaign now where we're able to reach a ton of new people.
So it's interesting that you mentioned that taking and distilling something that's sometimes a challenge to read. I the first time I stumbled or chewed through Road to Serfdom, I had to take notes, and it's kind of complex and written for a specific audience. And what you've done to convert it into a simple, easy yet consistent or true to the message format has really worked well, and being able to then take that and, as you just suggested, presenting it to kids who share it with their friends, who then maybe bring it home and introduce their parents to concepts they've never been tuned into is really just wonderful. And in looking at your Facebook page and the amount of traffic that you get and the numbers that I see, it's clear that you're making an impact and your message is growing on a daily basis. That's spectacular.
Yeah, it's been accidental in many ways, humbling. I mean, we've definitely filled a void. We don't really have competition.
Right.
And what I love are just the parents' stories of it, like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I can talk to my kid about all sorts of things now. And their elementary school teacher, it's fun to hear the impact that it's having. So it's been a good success so far. We're going to keep going and we're having a ton of fun doing it.
Super. So the last book that you produced was The Golden Rule, or I should say the second to the last book, was The Golden Rule, based upon Ron Paul's message and some of his works. The book that I haven't read because it came out after I bought my pack was The Search for Atlas. I'm curious, mm-hmm. just personally, how you were able to take Ayn Rand's message, and how that converted to the pages.
Yeah, so it's difficult with any of these books because you obviously have to leave some stuff out. What we try and do is identify, the top 10 principles in each of these books, and often we're able to do, 6 to 8 or somewhere around there, depending on how the story goes. We don't want to make it, too textbooky or anything like that, where we're kind of wedging these ideas in and the flow of the story is kind of interrupted because we're having to talk about this idea now. We want it to be kind of natural and organic through the story. And so with Rand's book, we really had to just say, what are the top ideas that she was talking about? And so we kind of had fun with the story. So those who are familiar with Atlas Shrugged, right, who is John Galt, and he leaves and things fall apart and others start leaving and they're going to Galt Gulch and society starts to... We kind of did the same thing in our story where it takes place at a circus and we have a character named Atlas who embodies kind of the John Galt. He's a strong man in the circus. And if you know your Atlas, he's holding up the world, right? And then he shrugs it off. A strong man in our story in the circus, and he gets so fed up because everyone's always being jealous of him and thinking that he shouldn't get all the fancy food and the massages and everything that he does because he's so productive and amazing and the reason why people come to the circus. And so he leaves. Galt in Rand's story, when Atlas leaves the circus, things start to fall apart. Fewer people come because the main attraction's not there. They're not selling as many tickets, so that now they have to start letting people go. Aspiration, they're trying to figure out what to do. Meanwhile, you've got the clowns as part of the circus. The lead clown is named Krugy, after Paul Krugman. And I introduced some fun central planning arguments that the clowns are kind of the socialists, right? And so they're kind of advancing those arguments. Oh, who needs them anyways? He didn't build the circus, right? All his success he owes to what we've done. And they're kind of caught in the middle of these competing arguments and ideas. Ultimately, they decide to go on the search for Atlas. And they find him and they learn from him why he left and why the circus can only be prosperous with him if he's given his fair reward, if he's given what he's due, what he's earned. And so that's kind of the premise of the story, where we kind of condense the broader story in Rand's book into kind of a shorter, similar story in ours, and then along the way introduce some of those key ideas as well. So some, dedicated, ardent Randites and objectivists, I think we did a pretty good job. It is a tough thing to pull off. It takes a lot of refinement to do this well, so it seems natural. It's a fun story. But we're still, teaching a lot of new ideas along the way. So that's the latest book. And as I said, we're going to soon begin book 8. Hopefully in the next few weeks, we'll be able to announce what it is.
That's exciting. I can't wait to hear about it. Talk a little bit about the process, because I know, being involved in the creative effort myself and have been for a while, it takes a while to, start at a place, think where you're going to end up, and then watch the process take you through it. You kind of shared or alluded to a little bit about how you do it, but you know, taking a work and then condensing it into something that ultimately is successful is a challenge, and working with another creative, you know, a partner to do the illustrations and tell the story through the pictures has to be kind of challenging. How long does it take you to produce a project typically?
Well, the longest part obviously is the illustration. And so what I'll usually do is come up with an idea or a concept. I'll figure out what book we want to, you know, incorporate or base our book upon. And I'll do a first draft to kind of kick out the ideas. That first draft might take me, you know, 3 or 4 hours. Send it to Elijah. He'll bounce back a bunch of ideas. And inevitably, I incorporate 80% of what Elijah suggests because he is so like-minded. Had I chosen some random illustrator to do it, right, you know, and kind of been on my own, as it were, in that respect, the books would be, you know, as they are. But he has such a visual mind. He thinks about how to understand the ideas of liberty visually. And so he'll think, oh, well, if we changed the story just like this, then I could, then kids who are more visual learners would kind of see it rather than read it. And so he'll have a lot of creative input like that to refine the story that I did in the first draft. Another draft, spend a couple hours on it, kick it over to my wife, who's our editor-in-chief. She's got a great eye for trying to make this stuff understandable for people who don't eat, breathe, and sleep liberty like Elijah and I do. And so she helps kind of provide that perspective. Creations on the draft. I'd say cumulatively I'll spend, you know, 20 or 30 hours total on the text. So not a ton of time, but that span is over several weeks where we're kind of taking some time to think about it and so forth. Then Elijah will take about a month and a half, sometimes up to 2 months of full-time work to do the initial sketches that I'll then give input on, tweak based on that input. Then he'll move to the line art where he's kind of penciling it in, and then he'll kind of do the final line art, the coloring, the shadowing, the texturing, and everything else. So that's kind of a lengthy process. When we're, you know, a month or so away from the book is when I really then start ramping up all the marketing together to you know, let folks know about it on our email list and social media and getting people excited about it, e-commerce stuff, and then, you know, the rest takes off from there where our team that handles all the fulfillment, shipping, and everything can get it out. But in the end, you know, the illustration is the largest part, but then he's done with it. Then from there, it's just continual, you know, marketing and doing interviews, of course, and press and things like that to get the word out there. So what we're averaging right now is that every, I don't know, about 8 months is when we have a new book coming out. And so unfortunately, a lot of the parents who've been with us since the beginning, you know, have that delayed gratification that they've, oh, come on, I want another book, whereas a lot of our newer people are like, great, I bought 7 books at once, right, you know, and so we have some dedicated readers who've been with us since the beginning, and it's just so gratifying seeing them tell us how their kids light up and await the mailman with anticipation for the next installment to come out. So it's good times.
So, you know, it's really interesting that you describe that process, and my mind wandered back to a lot of the messages that you hear Tom Woods and Jason Stapleton talk about, where it's, you know, doing what you're doing, taking a project that started out as you know, a crazy idea, certainly not something that you 3 years ago visualized that you'd be here today, and taking advantage of the tools that are available to all of us to take an idea like this and turn it into a revenue stream where, you know, you can devote yourself to furthering the message of liberty and get you know, be able to put food on your table and make your mortgage payment and you know, enjoy what you're doing for yourself and your kids and the rest of us, because these tools are available. It's spectacular, and boy, that just warms my entrepreneurial heart.
It's again been so interesting because it was so accidental and kind of organic, and me just wanting to find something for my kids. But probably now transition into with the stuff we do at Libertas Institute. For our part, it was also kind of one of many projects that we're doing. So it was kind of natural for us to kind of take this on and have it be kind of another offering that we're trying to do to the public to educate people. So it is definitely very satisfying to be able to work on these types of projects to not only bring in some revenue and have it be self-sustaining, because for so long I was just, you know, a nights and weekends activist, you know, just could afford doing things here and there, but it's amazing the way your productivity takes off when you're able to do this type of stuff full time.
Well, it's really spectacular, and you're to be congratulated. All the folks who want to push the forward, the message of liberty, have a great tool in the Tuttle Twins. Now, you've got a Facebook presence, facebook.com/Tuttle Twins, and the website where people can go purchase these books is TuttleTwins.com. You've got a great set of pop-up windows, and I know that you run discounts from time to time. So I encourage everyone listening to go check out the books for themselves. And if you think that this is something that you can help to share with youngsters in your lives, I fully encourage it. So again, the Facebook presence and TuttleTwins.com is where people can go to check it out and buy the books. Now, it's funny because I wasn't very familiar with LibertasUtah.org. I checked it out yesterday in preparation for our talk today. And I'm super jealous that we don't have something like what you've got going in Utah here in Nevada. And I'm looking at it as incentive for me to work with folks or even just get up off my fanny and do it myself. Because in looking at the depth and the effort that you're putting forward, it's truly amazing what you've got going. Tell us a little bit about LibertasUtah.org.
So that is the website for our nonprofit think tank or public policy institute. It's called Libertas Institute. Libertas is the Roman goddess of liberty, the Statue of Liberty. Her name is Libertas, or some pronounce it Libertas. Language, obviously, so we can debate how that's pronounced. But our organization's been around for 6 years. We're a state-based organization, so in our case, we focus in terms of our legal policy research and advocacy just on Utah issues. But then, with stuff like the Tuttle Twins and other projects we do, they definitely have a much broader appeal outside of our state. I will say that for Nevada, there is, and I'm only lightly familiar with them, kind of a sister organization, if I can even call it that, the Nevada Policy Research Institute, NPRI.org, except one. There is a right of center, conservative, libertarian, free market type think tank. Some are much more successful and active than others. I'm not too familiar with the Nevada Policy Research Institute, but for those of your listeners who aren't familiar with it, perhaps it's worth to and reach out and how you might be able to help them achieve similar success. For our case, we've been able to develop a 77% track record of success for every policy that we propose, the law. And these are very, libertarian things. We position ourselves as kind of a libertarian-leaning organization. We're conservative-friendly, being in Utah, obviously. Folks who work with us have a background in conservatism before they arrived at libertarianism. And if you think about the Venn diagram between the two, obviously there's a lot of overlap. And so right. That's where we focus, is on things within that overlap, pushing the edge a little bit and working to legalize medical marijuana in Utah. Everyone thought that would never happen. And yet, over the past 4 years of our work, we've shifted public opinion to the point where 75% now support it. And there's a public ballot initiative that's going to happen in November that our team has been helping out on, that the voters are easily going to pass into law. We've chipped away at the war on drugs. We've deregulated homeschooling. The nation's only transparency law to find out when SWAT teams are being used and forcible entry high-risk warrants are being used. We do a lot of kind of innovative, interesting things. Food trucks is another great example. Everyone loves food trucks, but here in Utah, like in most states, they're highly regulated. Many cities ban them or restrict, when they can be near a restaurant. And so we passed the first in the nation food truck freedom law. That kind of deregulated and cleared out a lot of those duplicative or unconstitutional regulations. So we've been able to achieve some good policy success in trying to reform a lot of the laws so that we can then, we call it nail it and scale it. So we'll nail it in Utah and then scale to other states and say, hey, we want to help you guys out, learn from our experience, how can we be of service? A great example is Nevada doesn't suffer from this, but Utah was like the only Western state until this year, because of our work to require the mandatory vehicle safety inspection. And if you look at the map, it's basically the liberal eastern states and then Texas and Utah that had it.
Right.
And all of our sisters, you know, surrounding states didn't have it at all. So we were able to get rid of that. And now we're working with groups like ours in other states to say, hey, we want to help you. Here's the arguments that we found to be most compelling. You know, here's what the opposition did. Here's how we can help. About is trying to actually change the law. For so long, I was just a you know, Facebook warrior. I was a blogger a decade ago, back when that was a really big thing, right? I was just kind of a sideline activist and an opinion, whatever, commentator. It is so satisfying to actually be able to change things, right? Because that's what we all supposedly want to do, but so few of us are actually taking our venting and our airing of grievances and actually applying that energy to something productive. And so I encourage everyone to try and find opportunity is, because it makes all the difference in the world to actually be making a difference in the world.
So it's interesting that you sort of share that perspective, because too many times folks just think that, you know, one person, one voice, one keyboard warrior really can't make much that much of a difference in the scheme of things. And the fact is that if you truly are passionate about the message of liberty and pushing it forward, there are lots of different ways, especially today, that provide you avenues and opportunities. We have a very strong person in the Libertarian Party here of Nevada who is a legislative advocate and does a lot of work with our part-time legislature who meets every other year. And she does a great job. Wendy is on our management team, and she does a lot of, you know, individual activism and pushing the bills against restricting liberty and freedom and that sort of thing. But, you know, this is something that anybody and everyone can do. And to the extent that you have the time and the effort and the inclination, again, with the tools that are available, you know, for $15 or $20, you can buy a URL and a WordPress skin and, you know, rock and roll. So what you've done with Libertas, right? Is that right? Did I get it?
However you want to pronounce it is fine by me.
It's funny, in Nevada, we take personal offense to Nevada, and most folks on the East Coast are you know, particular in saying it that way. So, you know, there's nothing more sweeter to a man or woman's ears than that of their own name. But the notion behind and the effectiveness of LibertasUtah.org and what you've done is really incredible. I mean, it's spectacular.
I appreciate that. And I, before we end, I at least want to share something that our listeners, rather than just learning about us, can take away to do themselves. And that is, if I had to impart one suggestion for how to actually, you know, change the law and have some policy success for any of your listeners. And it's going to sound overly simplistic, but experience has borne out the wisdom of this one thing, and that is building a relationship. So in Nevada, you're every lot of downtime. There's a lot of opportunity to build a relationship. What I tell people here in Utah would be the same for Nevada. Figure out who your legislators are, get a group of people together, ask them to come chat with you. Take them to lunch, invite them to a little cottage meeting at your home. Make sure they know your name. Make sure they know who you are, that maybe there's a group behind you so you have influence, right? Or there's other people you represent. But build that relationship, because literally all it takes, I mean, one of the most basic reasons why we're as successful as we are in changing as many laws as we do, farm stuff out to other legislators. We'll coordinate and say, hey, Representative so-and-so, would you run this bill? Hey, Senator, what do you think about this? Oh, yeah, I'll run that bill. And we're able to disseminate a lot of ideas to different legislators who can then go quarterback those, do most of the work. I mean, we'll help a lot. We're up at the Capitol every day during our session, but we find quarterbacks, people who agree with us, who can make it their own. And so having those relationships is key, because you know what they think about certain issues. Even if you disagree on, you know, 30% of issues, right, you know, on those other ones, you're going to be able to work together. Get to know them. It is so simple. It sounds really simple. But that is where, and that's why lobbyists are so successful, is they have relationships. Get your own relationship with your lawmakers. It sounds simple, but that is how anyone can have an impact.
Well, as I learned a long time ago from a fellow in Tokyo that I was negotiating a contract with, I wanted to try and do it over the phone. And he said, you know, Sam, nothing beats face-to-face. And the beauty of living in a smaller, less populated state is that we do have the opportunity to meet these folks face-to-face. And I couldn't agree with you more. When you start to establish a relationship, you get a rapport going, you get the contacts within their offices and get the aides to know you, on a first name basis, you have a great opportunity to influence them and have your voice heard. So that's spectacular. We're pushing up against our time limit, and I got to tell you, I'm really excited to be able to talk to you today and excited to learn what the 8th book is going to be. Once that's out and about and you're ready to start marketing it, I look forward to having you back on the Battleborn Liberty podcast here in Nevada.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate your time.
Connor, thank you very much, and have a great day.
This show is brought to you by the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Music is provided by T. Sims. Please support the show by subscribing, sharing it with friends, and leaving a positive review on iTunes. For more information or to learn how to get involved, visit lpnevada.org. Thank you for listening.